The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Michael White in Birmingham, where Liberal Democrat activists are heading home to their constituencies, ready to pass on their leaders' ringing reassurances.
This country would be in deep trouble today if we hadn't gone into government last year. And Britain will be a fairer nation tomorrow because we are in government today. Never apologise for the difficult things we're having to do. We're serving a great country at a time of great need. There are no shortcuts, but we won't flinch. Our values are strong. Our instincts are good. Reason, not prejudice. Compassion, not greed. Hope, not fear.
Nick Clegg faced his party after a conference week in which his senior colleagues, some of them, appeared to be laying out their own leadership credentials, at least according to some suspicious media types. But leaders always get the last word at party conferences, and Clegg used the occasion to remind delegates of his and their courage and achievements.
Last year, I walked through the door of number 10, but we all walked through a kind of door together. To being, once again, a party of national government. So we must now move beyond the reflexes of opposition to the responsibilities of government and the opportunities of government too. New social housing, criminal justice reform, fixed-term parliaments, keeping our post offices open, House of Lords reform, better mental health care, safer banks, income tax down for ordinary workers, capital gains tax up for the rich, compulsory retirement scrapped, pensions protected by a triple lock, ID cards history, child detention ended.
In doing so, he made sure he got a few good kicks in at the Labour Party in passing, seeming to rule out any future coalition under his leadership, a message which has come through loud and clear all over the conference this week.
Another term of Labour would have been a disaster for our economy. So don't for a moment let Labour get away with it. Don't forget the chaos, the fear of 2008. And never, ever trust Labour again with the economy.
Well, there it is. You can hear the cheering still in the back of the hall. Nick Clegg, joined by his wife Miriam, are fighting their way out of the hall. They're coming our way, actually, as I can see all the flash bulbs. Good speech, I thought. Party leader speech. Touched a lot of good themes. Right at the front, very specifically, we've had a terrible year. We're tough. We're going to get through it. My God, he's coming past me now. He looks like a film star. No, they're just peeling off to the right. We've been spared. She is wearing a yellow Lib Dem dress. She doesn't like this sort of stuff, you know. Never mind. His personal theme here, interesting, I hadn't heard this before from Nick Clegg, was that, opportunity for children is what gets to him. That's his core driving force. And he announced, as Patrick Winter reported in this morning's Guardian, summer school for poor kids, rescue kids before they end up as rioters, basically. And not an emotional appeal. He's not the type. He's quite a cool customer, Clegg. But I thought effective language. They're streaming out. Let's catch a few of the delegates, see what they say.
I thought that was the best speech I've ever heard Nick Clegg give.
He was more confident than in the past. I thought he was getting into his stride. What themes appeal to you in particular, or what explanations for the past year's drama?
Well, he dealt with the difficulties very honestly, but then he started to be positive and talk about what we're going to do in the future, and he hit exactly the right notes. Early years and more promotion of jobs. That's what we need.
Very good.
What did you like about it?
Much better than Sheffield. Well, progressive as always. We've got to look forward. That was great.
Excuse me.
Oh, hello.
Guardian podcast, but don't panic.
Hi, Michael.
Asking people what they thought of the speech.
It was excellent. It was really good, really positive, and it's... You know that we've done so much, but when you hear it listed like that, it just brings it home, exactly what we've managed to deliver so far. And I was very pleased to hear him name-check Tottenham, because that's my area, and we were really hit badly in the riots.
You certainly were, yes. Yeah. What did you feel when he talked about, you know, 2 weeks summer school, English and math for kids who are in danger, as I think he put it, of falling through the cracks? You as a Tottenhamite.
Well, I think it's a wonderful idea. I mean, there's so many children, they just need that little bit extra, and anything that we can do to make sure they've got the best start and they can go on and do anything they want to, that would be wonderful.
Right, we've caught Simon Hoggart tapping away at his sketch. Simon, you've been watching Lib Dem leaders since Gladstone, or at the very least since Jeremy Thorpe. How was that one for you?
Well, it was actually better than I expected. Nick Clegg can be a really deeply boring speaker. I've seen him send a fantastically enthusiastic audience almost asleep with this talk of, and if I may move on to my seventh point now, that kind of thing. But this was, I thought, very well tailored. It wasn't thrilling, but Lib Dems don't expect really to be thrilled. What they wanted to do was to be sent on their way feeling that things weren't quite as bad as they thought, that there was a continued point in their existence, that they were actually achieving something by being in government. And of course, he gave us a long list of the things that they've managed to do, sometimes in the teeth of Conservative opposition. Also, some strange little moments. He told us, and this was a wonderfully Lib Dem moment, that he'd been to see President Sarkozy in France, and Sarkozy had given him a gift of a rare bottle of cognac dating from the year he, Nick Clegg, was born, and he had given Sarkozy a bar of Kendall mint cake. It seems to me to be a wonderfully banal moment there.
Sarkozy will live off that story for years. Look on the bright side. That incident, it was an unscripted bit. Well, it may not have been scripted, but it wasn't in the issued text.
It wasn't in the issued text.
Aggression alleged.
Quite, yes. Destroying our teeth, not our way of life, I suppose. That was the message from that. And he did. Also, the other thing is, you know, curious, if Margaret Thatcher set the template for the government of Britain from her time in office, Tony Blair set the template for political speeches. One of the things he did was to deploy the verb-free sentence, which was a very cunning way of saying something, seeming to make a pledge without making a promise, because you're not saying something will happen, you're simply expressing it as an aspiration. And I counted up, I was very assiduous about this, 149 verb-free sentences in Clegg's speech.
I better stop you here, you know, you better go away and write all this down before you forget. Thank you very much. Guardian sketchwriter Simon Hoggart there. Gosh, I could hardly stop him. Anyway, verb-free sentences from Clegg or not, the fortunes of this party depend on the economy. And this week, the gathered delegates felt the full gloom of Vince Cable's analysis. I caught up with him as he left the Sky TV box earlier and asked whether he's staying true to those Keynesian principles he espoused last year, increasing spending to offset the effects of recession.
I spoke on Monday and have written about Keynes and what he would have done in the current position and what he would have been unable to do, because we're now in a very open economy with very febrile markets, and they have to be demonstrated to them that we're observing our financial disciplines. But yes, the government does believe in capital investment. We've increased it from the drastic cuts that Alistair Darling introduced. We'd like to do more, but we have to be conscious of the fact that anything invested has to be borrowed. And, you know, as you've seen from the figures this morning, government borrowing is still very large, and we've got to get it down.
Story in the FT this week, authoritative paper, that maybe the structural gap in the tax take is, £12 billion larger than they'd predicted, and that's going to add to the pressure on you and the growth in the economy. The economy is closer to full capacity than we thought. Were they remotely in the ballpark, as you understand it, those sort of
reports?
Well,
that was one particular commentator, a very respected, able economist, giving his own individual view on it. The consequence of that would be that you have to tighten the budget. Other people are telling us to relax it. We're actually sticking to what we've committed ourselves to do, and we will stick with that course, because it's the right one.
Sounds hellish. Are you still having a good time? Are you enjoying it? It's been a pretty turbulent year for you.
Well, it has been turbulent. It's very hard work. Well, that's as it should be. But I'm personally proud of the fact that in my government department we're doing a lot of things to help the recovery through apprenticeships, technology innovation centres, getting the Green Investment Bank launched, promoting the Regional Growth Fund. You know, there's a lot of things happening in my bit of government which are contributing in a positive way, quite apart from, you know, having to take responsibility for all the painful cuts.
Lib Dems arrived here in Birmingham hoping to be rehabilitated after their dire local election results. They lost 700 or so seats, and of course the defeat in the AV referendum on May the 6th. Midweek, their talismanic former leader, Lord Paddy Ashdown, set his colleagues the ultimate challenge to explain to the country, in as fewer words as possible, what Lib Dems now stand for.
If I have a criticism of our party, it is only this, that we have not yet articulated what we are for, the central thing that we are about. We've got lots of policies and we've got lots of achievements, but they're a kind of list of things. And until you have got what you're doing, what you're arguing for, what your policies are, each reflecting and refracting a central message, it doesn't make sense. And you and Michael Meadowcroft used to say to me, we've not only got to win the voters, we've also got to win the vote winners. And until we have a clearer idea in half a dozen or less sentences what it is we stand for, until the public sees the policies that we argue and says, I see why they're doing that, because they believe in that, you're not going to get this message across.
So do the Lib Dems have a sense of their own direction? I took to the conference floor and found a man whose own political journey involved moving from a number 10 Downing Street during Jim Callaghan's Labour premiership of the 70s to the current House of Lords as a Lib Dem. Tom, better known now as Lord McNally of Blackpool and a government minister at Justice.
We are, both in our origins and in our DNA, a centre-left party. And a centre-left party going into coalition with a centre-right party, there are going to be tensions. And we are not on the road to merger. We're not going to morph into national liberals. We are in this coalition for the same reasons as we entered it 18 months ago, that we faced a national crisis of proportions that needed a response which didn't leave the government weak and short-term.
That's the economy, isn't it?
It is. As
I, a year or so ago, thought that, looking at the history books, that your party would end up splitting. It may still do, of course. Long way to go before this 2015 election. But I'm less confident. I wasn't very confident then. I think it less likely now. Do you think it's still on the cards?
No. I mean, there will be people, as you rightly said, both you and I, Michael, have been around quite a long time. And there are always people who will walk away and be disaffected with it. But no, I think this party is pretty solid now. And, you know, one of the experiences, Nick Clegg kind of glazes over when I start sentences with "when I," but having been around a long time...
Disrespectful young man.
I know. But I actually sat in Downing Street with Jim Callaghan and Dennis Healey when the pound went from 1.95 to 1.47 in a matter of 4 hours. I know what happens when a government loses control of its own destiny. And therefore, I think that there is a wider understanding of the party that we had to be part of tough decisions to keep our economic sovereignty, to keep the show on the road. And I agree with another long-distance runner, Vince Cable, when Vince told the party earlier in the week that left-wing aspirations count for nothing if you're broke.
Richard Kemp, veteran Liverpool councillor for most of the past 40 years, had a different take on the deal.
You have to consider what the alternatives were. Were we going to be with a right-wing Tory party or, frankly, a right-wing Labour party? I was able, for the last 9 years of a Labour government, to say I'm a member of the only left-wing party in mainstream British politics. The Labour Party had played themselves out. We had people like Lord Mandelson making it quite clear they liked being in bed, or certainly in boat, with the filthy rich. So there wasn't much of an option. The fact is, it wasn't us that made decision who were the biggest party in Parliament. It was the electorate. I think the electorate were wrong, but I think the electorate are always right. But we always have to live with the consequences of what the electorate do.
I even managed to get a word or two with Baroness Shirley Williams, who's seen a few of these conferences as a teenager, star of the Labour circuit. She was at Clem Attlee's famous 1945 conference before joining Tom Nally on that road to the Lib Dems. Shirley, they all call her that, detected a difference in tone at this year's conference.
I mean, first of all, it's a remarkably serious conference. It's not a place where everyone's having a lot of social fun. They're all extremely serious about what they're doing. I think two things have happened. One is that they now feel they're beginning to make their way towards a strategy for coalition. And that a strategy for coalition doesn't mean that you pull your forelock and simply do what your Conservative majority wants you to do. You start fighting from early on, recognising that it's not likely that fighting for what you actually want to see, whether it's on health or welfare or whatever it may be, pensions, is actually going to wreck the coalition. We're slowly beginning to realise that the coalition is actually quite tough. It's like a tough piece of plastic.
You can have discussion and debate in public within the framework of the coalition more easily in some ways than one party, because it's two parties.
Of course, of course. And also because the original fear, it's very marked among our whips early on, was what you had to do is prove your loyalty to the coalition. Yep. What people now realise is that you don't have to do that. You prove your loyalty to your own beliefs within the coalition, if I can make a rather boring point. In other words, by standing up for your own beliefs, you are not going to destroy the coalition. You're going to move it closer to what you want it to be.
You've got to sort of calibrate that a bit. It's rather like within your party, when you rebel against your own party, it's always sensible to be conspicuously loyal or hardworking or something else. You have to pay your dues, don't you?
Yes, you do. But in the case of the coalition, oddly enough, you can actually take it further. Because within a party, at a certain point, it cracks. Well, you could, in certain points, get to a situation where the coalition cracked. But I think what we're recognising, more and more of us are, that because the economic imperative is so powerful, and we can certainly argue, as the newspapers were full of this morning, should there be more money spent on job creation and so on, I'd certainly think that myself. But I think what we do also recognise is that, given what's happening to the euro and all the rest of it, it's not, there would be a lot of downsides to cracking the coalition on economic policy as distinct from some amendments within it. And the same thing we're beginning to learn about everything, that you can actually make a lot of changes without the coalition collapsing.
The unmistakable voice there of Shirley Williams. Well, it's been an unexpected week for me, as I've said before, surprisingly cheerful. The gathering storm is around us all. The Lib Dems know less than anybody else. They live in the real world. They live in cities and in the countryside. They know a lot of their fellow countrymen, their voters, their constituents are poor and suffering and getting poor. And the prospect for all of us is not bright. But they've managed to persuade themselves, Nick Clegg reinforcing it in this last session, that what they did was right in 2010, in joining the coalition, instead of letting the Tories sweat it out on their own, and they're paying a price for it now, but they think they've done the right thing by the country, and they are going to go forward. This time last year, I'm sure I predicted a likely split in the party. I have to say, this year, I think that's much less likely than I did 12 months ago, but we'll just have to see. On next week to the Labour conference in Liverpool, where Ed Miliband marks his first year as leader of the party. Hope to see you then. The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Michael White. Bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.